Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's just seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. I've got a great lineup of guests for you today. Greg Frank and his friends will all be here in just a couple of minutes after National Native News to tell us about the Saxophone Showcase Concert, which is Saturday at Northern Light Church. There's an opening for First Friday tonight at the Alaska State Museum. Sitka artist Nicholas Gallinan will be talking to us from Sitka by telephone. He's rushing to get here. The reception starts at 4:30. UAS will drop in to tell us about fall classes and enrollment day. Katie Bowser will join me. And the Gene Rogers Memorial Celebration folks will show up. That's at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon at the Jack. And the STAR program is starting up again by Perseverance Theater out at UAS, so we'll have folks in to tell us about that. Hey, who thought it'd be sunny this afternoon, right? National Native News is next, then we'll get to those guests. Thank you.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Dissatisfaction with Canada's largest Native organization appears to be growing, and now there are even calls for the creation of an alternative to the Assembly of First Nations. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The calls are coming from the province of Manitoba and are apparently being spearheaded by Derek Nepinak, the head of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs. He's even hinted that the Manitoba Chiefs could break away from the AFN. Nepinak says the AFN isn't working so well these days, and many Aboriginal people who took part in the Idle No More protests and were hoping for change are now frustrated with the lack of progress in treaty negotiations with the federal government in Ottawa. And Nepinak says there's support for breaking away from the AFN.
I've been approached by many chiefs across different regions to move in that direction because the AFN does not seem to be holding the fundamentals of treaty in the highest regard in terms of attacking some of these policies that are coming out of provincial and federal governments.
Nepinak says the new organization could be one that's not dependent on the Canadian government for money, and there are demands for more accountability from governments and from the AFN. He says it's time for a transformation in how First Nations organize and present themselves. He says Native leaders will likely hold further talks about the issue this summer. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Moapa Band of Paiutes applauded legislation this week headed to the governor's desk to end Nevada's use of coal power, including from the Reed Gardner plant. Vicki Simmons chairs the tribe's environmental committee and is a member of the tribe's health board.
It really makes a difference that this plant be closed down because of how many years we've suffered with this pollution. For over 50 years, we can't take it as a people.
The tribe believes health problems like asthma and other diseases are linked to the neighboring plant. The bill calls for shutting down the plant in 4 years and increasing the use of renewable energy. The U.S. Attorney's Office for Arizona says a drug and violent crime sweep took place this week near and on the Yavapai Apache Nation. 22 individuals are under indictment on federal charges. Others are facing tribal and state charges. Tribal officials say methamphetamine has plagued the tribe for years. Authorities are cracking down on traffickers. The effort was a tribal, federal, and state coordination. The American Indian College Fund and Walt Disney Studios have announced a special deal that will benefit students attending tribal colleges across the country. KUNM's Christine Trudeau reports.
Proceeds from the world premiere of The Lone Ranger will be used for scholarships and other support for Native students. The $1,000 per ticket price tag includes a red carpet event with celebrities. Johnny Depp plays the Native American character Tonto and Armie Hammer as the Lone Ranger. Disney stepping up to support Native students is a big deal, says the American Indian College Fund. The group provides scholarships to about 21% of the 30,000 students in the United States attending tribal institutions. The fund's public education director, Dina Horwedel, says this is a small step in making higher education available to tribal students.
It'll bring a lot of awareness about what's going on in Indian country, but there's still a lot of need and there's still a long way to go.
The film's producers say it's an action-adventure reimagining of the Lone Ranger storyline, where a U.S. lawman and Native American warrior team up to fight for justice. The world premiere is set to take place June 22nd at Disney's California Adventure Park. Audiences nationwide can check out the film when it opens July 3rd. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
A new musical project in Minneapolis is exploring the influence of Native American music on jazz. Minnesota musician Bob Fantuzzo and his group Jazz Zen are creators of the performance A Weaving of Traditions. Fantuzzo plays the Native American flute.
The rhythms of jazz were more influenced by Native American music than African music.
Liz Jokala, an Ojibwe woman, is providing vocals and percussion at the performance. It takes place Saturday at Hamline University. During this week in 2012, tribal and U.S. Justice Department officials announced a pilot initiative to address sexual assaults on Montana reservations by establishing response teams. The plan included monthly meetings by attorneys, victim specialists, advocates, and law enforcement to focus on incidences on reservations. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it's 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska, and I have four guests in the studio here from all over the country. Greg Frank is evidently the instigator of this thing. It's called a saxophone showcase concert. It's going to be Saturday at Northern Lights Church. With me are Eric Hedstrom, Kyla Dubois, and Todd Hunt's here, and he's going to be waving his arms trying to keep the saxophones all together, which is a difficult task, indeed. Saxophone players have their own minds.
They really do.
Yeah, they're not like other musicians. They're not like violinists. They don't all bow in the same direction.
Right.
So what brings a lovely young lady from Boise, Idaho, up here to play saxophone?
Well, in December, Greg gave me a call, and asked me, he said, I'm putting together a saxophone concert, and I'm thinking about asking you and some other people from University of Idaho, which is where Greg and I went to school together for about a year, to come up. And I said, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And 6 months later, it's all put together, and here I am.
Now, not too many people know about the University of Idaho and the connection to Lionel Hampton. Are you in that program, the jazz program there?
Well, the Lionel Hampton School of Music is the music department at University of Idaho, and we don't have a jazz department, but it is encompasses the whole music school. So yes, I have been a part of that for 4 years.
And they have a big major jazz festival there.
Yes, they do. February.
Yeah, which I don't know. Did he make that grant before he died, I think? So he was actually there. He's performed, I think, at UI.
Yes, he has. Up until his death, I believe.
Right. Okay. Cool. Yeah, anyway. And Eric, you wandered in from the farther reaches as well, right?
Yeah, the farther reaches, you can call it that. Bremerton, Washington, out there next to Seattle, very right away.
Uh-huh. And you play which sax?
I've been playing the alto and the bari sax tomorrow night.
So I don't know if all of our listeners know that there's basically, what, five voices? Well, there's six with the bass sax. So
lots of them.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's the one where you have to sit on a stool in order to play the thing, because it's like 7 feet long, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So have you got a contrabass in this thing, or are you going down to
Germany? No, I don't think there's one in the state.
Oh, okay. Probably it's too expensive to ship up.
Right. Yeah.
That's a lot of tubing to move. Yeah. So Adolph Sax invented this horn, and he was trying for a particular thing, I think. He was trying to get a reed instrument that would sound like a trumpet.
Right, something that would sort of bridge the gap between the winds and the brass. And what he came up with was a really great horn, but in my opinion doesn't blend perfectly with woodwinds or brass, because it's totally its own thing, and it's one of the things that makes it a really great solo instrument because it has such a distinctive sound.
So, Greg, did you like major in sax at UI? Is that
no, I was a minor, and one of the things was I wanted to keep up with it and really trying to push myself. And University of Idaho has a really great sax studio. I had a really great experience there, and that's how I met Eric and Keila. And
I see Keila nodding here. She's sharing. Her.
Yeah, no, it was great. No, Dr. Vanessa Seeler, she teaches saxophone over there, and she does just a phenomenal job. So when I was first trying to put this all together, that was one of the first places I was actually drawn to try and find players was actually University of Idaho.
So this concert's at 3 o'clock at Saturday, Northern Light Church. Great acoustics, by the way.
It'll actually be 7:30.
Oh, it's 7:30.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's wrong note. Okay, so 7:30.
Yeah.
You can come early if you want.
Todd, be quiet over there.
Yes, sir.
7:30 in Northern Light Church. Now, what are people going to hear?
Well, they're going to hear a Wide variety. Mostly it's going to be focusing on classical saxophone is really kind of the goal here, because when the saxophone was first invented, jazz wasn't even an idea. You know, there was no hint of it. So really this is kind of a way to showcase the instrument, how, you know, originally kind of the I don't know, the original intention was, or kind of how the sound of it was supposed to be. So you're going to hear pieces that were originally written for saxophone. You're also going to hear pieces that were solo pieces that were also arranged for the saxophone. And also quartets, which is made up of, you know, of course, four different players, but they're all playing a different saxophone: baritone saxophone, tenor saxophone, alto saxophone, soprano saxophone. And we'll have two quartets. The quartet the three of us plus Hope Aldergetti will form our own quartet, and also the Junior Douglas High School saxophone quartet will also be performing. And of course, the saxophone choir will also be performing. We have about 13 or 14 players in that. And so what's really been interesting for me for this whole week is that I've never actually, you know, flying Eric and Keel up here. They've been here this whole week. So one of the challenging things about this is trying to put something like this together essentially in a week for our quartet, because all four of us haven't been playing together until what, Monday?
Yeah. Tuesday.
Yeah. it's an interesting experience, and it's really, really going to be fun to listen to. I think these two, both degrees in music. Hope Aldergetti got her degree in music from University of Alaska Anchorage, so they're all going to be phenomenal, and the Juno Douglas High School Saxophone Quartet, they got a command performance at the Southeast Alaska Music Festival this last year in high school, and so they'll be performing one of those pieces, and they're going to be great, and so it's just going to be really wonderful. And I was really lucky to grab Todd onto this project as well, not only because he was a former sax player.
Former sax player. No one is ever a former sax player.
But
not even you, from what I understand.
Once you do it, it's kind of like life, you know?
Yeah. So I was really fortunate to grab him along because he's really talented in what he does. And so, it's just going to be a really awesome, awesome night. And it really kind of grew from something, you know, from just a really small idea. And, you know, I want to commend Eric and Keela for being brave enough to come up here and listen to an idea such as this and really grasp onto it.
Keela, have you performed in this kind of all saxes all the time sort of setting before?
Or? Yeah, I have. Okay. I've been involved with quartet all 4 years at University of Idaho, and we did a saxophone ensemble last year.
Yeah.
The idea of a saxophone choir is intimidating, I have to say. What are we talking, 15, 20 saxes?
It actually works really astonishingly well. Uh-huh. I mean, I've been in some ensembles as large as 30, and it's fantastic, from sopranino through bass, you know, so I don't, however many that is.
I don't think I've ever seen a sopranino sax.
Yeah,
that thing's got to be about 7 inches
long. Yeah, it's
the size of my forearm, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, the piccolo of saxophones.
Yeah,
right?
Awful little thing.
Yeah.
I played the bass.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's such a diversity of tonal qualities there that you get, you know, a really wide range that gives the listener a lot to grasp onto.
Is anyone writing modern saxophone music for the orchestra or for saxophone quartets or like that?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, especially since the late 20s or the 30s, it's really, really taken off, and a lot of composers are writing for saxophone.
Would you play any of that at this concert? Any modern stuff?
We do have some. I think we do have one modern piece, and actually the saxophone quartet from JDHS, they're actually playing a really modern piece that was actually written in 2005.
Oh, okay.
So they're playing something really, you know, written really recently.
So it sounds like there's an immense amount of variability, or, you know, a variance across the thing. So it's not just people playing jazz licks and things like that. It's going to be classical saxophone,
mm-hmm. Yep.
And the emphasis on music that you don't really get to hear too much. The saxophone is very... it's not incorporated into orchestra very often. Sometimes for a voice, but very seldom as a regular instrument.
Right. No, and that's part of what I said before about it not really blending real well with the other instruments. It's a great solo voice. Like Ravel used it a lot. Mm-hmm. For instance.
Well, folks, it's going to be a great concert. It's at 7:30 Saturday night at Northern Light Church. I'm assuming, is there a charge for the concert? People pick up tickets at Hearthside and the usual? Or?
Actually, you don't have to pick up a ticket anywhere. It's completely free.
It's free. A free concert. Okay. Yeah. All right. So saxophone showcase, Greg Franks, the organizer, and Eric Hedstrom, Kyle Dubois, Todd Hunt, among a cast of 40 or thousands of saxophone players. Sounds like a great little kind of unusual concert for us here in Juneau, and it should be very entertaining.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for telling us about it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Matt.
Yeah, let's try this little piece of music picked out especially for us by Jeff as a piece here.
Nights are long and lonely since we've been apart. You'd come back if you but knew how I miss you, sweetheart. You said I wasn't playing fair, and so you had to go. There's a question I would ask you, dear. Your answer I must know. If I give up the saxophone, will you come back to me? If I give up the toodle-oodle-oo, will we bill and coo just like we used to do? I know the fault was all my own, you warned me time and time. Lips that touch a saxophone, you said, shall ne'er touch mine. But if I give up the saxophone, will you come back to me? My father plays the piccolo, my mother plays the drum, my brother plays the horses just because he is a bum-diddy-up-bum-bum-bum-bum, bum-diddy-up-dum-dum. My uncle plays harmonica and plays it way off key. My grandmama plays tennis cause she lives in Tennessee. See, 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 see. Now if I give up the saxophone, will you come back to me? If I give up the toodle-oodle-ay, anything you say, if you come back to stay. And when I go to bed at night, how all alone I feel. I found out that a saxophone has got no sax appeal. So if I give up the saxophone, will you come back to me?
So the saxophone showcase is, and you don't have to give up the saxophone to come. It is coming up on Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, 7:30 at Northern Light Church. A number of saxophonists all getting together and bringing us classical saxophone sounds for Juneau. So my next guest is coming to us sort of around the corner at Sitka. Nicholas Galanin, is it?
Galanin,
yeah. Galanin. Nicholas Galanin is opening a show at State Museum, Alaska State Museum, on First Friday tonight. The reception is at 4:30, and I'm not sure exactly how you're going to get up here, Nicholas, by the time for the reception. But anyway, your show has a really interesting comma in it. The title of the show is The State of Being, comma, Displaced. Would you care to elucidate us as to the comma?
A lot of the work that's in this exhibition was based around ideas of displacement, I suppose, and it's reference to a lot of things, especially history and history of the land and community, especially the Native community.
So I've seen at least one example of the art that people are going to see, and the image kind of is emerging from a field of white, and it's very indistinct. Was that the attempt that you were, or is that sort of the statement, or one of the statements you were trying to make?
Which image is this again?
Oh, this was the image of the eagles, or the Native carving face. It's in black and white, and the background was white, and then the piece is indistinct around the edges. It's kind of deliberately softened, and I wondered if that was part of the displacement that you were talking about.
I'm trying, there's so many flat pieces of work in that show, I'm having a hard time with it.
Okay.
It must be a monotype, black and white.
Yes, it is one of the monotypes.
A lot of those are created from the idea, the name of that series is Familiar Faces, and it's an idea of memory, I suppose. So the forms are loose and very quick and expressive, and that's what those images are. So they do reference a lot of Northwest Coast aesthetic, but they don't they don't give you a whole lot, so a lot of information on it visually. So it is clear from memory.
So when you're arranging a show with a theme like this, do all of the pieces that go into the show work toward the theme, or do you try to perhaps step away from it and then come back to it, or how?
You know, it depends. It really does depend on the work, and this was a generalized idea around some of this work. Some of the works had been created earlier in the past, even, but just haven't been shown in Juno. Some of the video work and stuff. So
you've incorporated video into the program as well.
Yeah.
And how does that work with the in a museum setting? In other words, does the viewer interact by starting the video, or does it just play continuously?
No, there's pieces in the exhibition are looped, so you don't have to view them all the way through.
I see.
You could get a minute of the video and hopefully get an idea of what the work is.
Okay.
About.
Okay. Now, the theme of displacement is, I think, of extreme timeliness in the emergence of kind of the return back to, particularly to the University of Alaska Southeast, has been moving toward having a major in the Tlingit language, which would be working to kind of reverse some of this stuff.
All of our history here, the history that is very recent, there's still land issues that are going on with communities and with, like, even ANCSA, Alaska Native Land Claims Act.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things that have been unaddressed or unresolved, and it's not only physically displacement, but also socially displaced, et cetera, et cetera. There's different versions of that come with it as well. So.
Displacement is a common occurrence in other parts of the world as well. Do you think your work will ever incorporate any comparison between, for instance, the...
It already does.
I see.
As far as dialogue goes, and it can. It's not limited to just this viewer in this space or this area. The whole process of this whole idea of colonization and... stolen land, it's very common. I mean, it's happened all over the place, and it is continuing. Loss of language, ideas of assimilation with culture.
So when you approach an idea like that, which has a kind of intellectual nature to it, and you're going to translate it into a visual, what kinds of processes do you go through in order to make it clear to us how you're apprehending this displacement?
Basically, a lot of the work that my most comfortable working mode at the moment for my visual art is working around ideas and concepts and trying to find the best visual format for it, for the audience, for the viewer, for that conversation to exist in. And being open to that means I'm not limited to saying I'm just going to paint and this. I'm just going to do it. So the work takes form in very interesting and diverse ways, and my portfolio kind of reflects that.
You actually have a couple of sculptural pieces in the show, I think. Well, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sculpture, video, flat painting.
Photography.
Okay. Are there any pieces? I apologize for not having had time to go over and get a quick preview at the museum.
Well, perfect. That means you have a good reason to go over there and check it out.
And I think so do many other people.
When you have some time.
I guess one of the questions I'm asking is, do any of the pieces that you incorporated into the show combine more than one of those elements?
Yeah. I wouldn't say that. I guess in the medium-wise, there's not something that has multiple.
Okay, so in other words, there's not video incorporated into a still painting or something like that?
No, not
no. Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay, well, the show is going to be the reception is going to be at 4:30, and the artist is going to be notably absent.
No, I'll be there. I'll be there at 7 p.m. giving an artist talk this evening.
So you're doing. You're going to make it in for the artist talk. That's perfect.
Yeah,
so
I fly in at 7, and then I'll run right over to the museum.
Okay, folks can have a last nibble off of the refreshment tray and perhaps a glass of wine while they're waiting for you to rush from the airport. And then at 7 o'clock, about 7:15, 7:30, you'll be doing the artist talk, which is part of these openings. So the Alaska State Museum also has a number of other exhibits that will be running through the month of June. I think yours is in the place. But they also have... you'll be on display through October 12th, and on display at the museum throughout the summer, Kayfield Parker Raven's Tales Weaving Exhibit, Playing with Lightning, and Tommy Joseph's exhibit of Tlingit armor entitled Rainforest Warriors. So a very strong Native presence in the museum pieces. Are you familiar with those two artists? Did you?
I am, yeah. I'm actually excited to go check it out. I used to, Tommy Joseph and I used to... run a gallery space here and stick it together, but he's got a larger space now. That's more.
Have you seen the material that he's displaying, the Rainforest Warrior set?
I haven't seen it installed. I've seen it here.
I'm looking
forward to.
So
getting a walkthrough.
Does that piece kind of blend with yours? Will people sort of move easily from one to the other?
I think so, but yeah, I'll have to see the space and the work. I haven't even seen my show since it's been hung. So.
Right. Well, we're looking forward to you catching that flight that leaves us arrives here at 7 o'clock and doing the artist talk this afternoon or this evening.
Yeah.
And congratulations on opening The State of Being Displaced at the State Museum with the opening. The reception at the opening will actually be at 4:30, but the artist talk will be at 7:30 this evening when Nicholas Galanin gets in from Sitka. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.
You bet.
I'll see you at the artist talk.
I hope so.
All right.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, June 7th, 2013. It's the birthday of the novelist Louise Erdrich, born in Little Falls, Minnesota in 1954. She grew up in North Dakota, the eldest of seven children. Her father came from a family of German immigrants, and her mother was French Ojibwe. And both her parents taught in the school run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. She went on to Dartmouth, admitted to the first class that accepted women, and it was also the first year a Native American Studies department was formed. Her first novel, Love Medicine, was a bestseller and won the National Book Critics Circle Award. Love Medicine was made up of many different stories told by all kinds of people living in and around a fictional reservation outside the town of Argus, North Dakota. Her second novel, The Beet Queen, was set in the town of Argus and focused on the German-American population there. Since then, she has set most of her novels in the same fictional place, novels such as The Last Report on the Miracles at Little Nohorse, The Master Butcher's Singing Club, and The Plague of Doves, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. And it's the birthday of novelist Elizabeth Bowen, born in Dublin. She's known for writing about British upper-class society in novels such as The Death of the Heart and A World of Love. It's the birthday of the woman who wrote, "We real cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight." Gwendolyn Brooks, who was born in Topeka, Kansas in 1917, grew up on the south side of Chicago, and she began writing poems as a child and published her first poem at the age of 13. Her parents encouraged her literary ambitions and put her into contact with Langston Hughes, who encouraged her to keep writing. She published her second collection of poetry, Annie Allen, in 1949, and in it she used an experimental form that she called the sonnet ballad. critics liked it, and a Times book reviewer praised her work as full of insight and wisdom and pity, technically dazzling. The next year, 1950, she became the first African-American to win the Pulitzer Prize. She said about her poetry, "I wrote about what I saw and heard in the street. I lived in a small second-story apartment at the corner, and I could look first on one side and then the other. There was my material." And here's a poem by Ted Berrigan entitled Wishes. "Now I wish I were asleep to see my dreams taking place. I wish I were more awake. I wish a sweet rush of tears to my eyes. Wish a nose like an eagle. I wish blue sky in the afternoon, bigger windows and a panorama, light and buildings and people in the street air. Wish my teeth were white and sparkled. Wish my legs were not where they are, where they are. I wish the days warmly cool and clothes I like to be inside of. Wish I were walking around in Chelsea, New York, and it was 5:15 a.m. and the sun coming up alone, you asleep at home. I wish red rage came easier. I wish death, but not just now. I wish I were driving alone across America in a gold Cadillac toward California and my best friend. I wish I were in love and you here." A poem by Ted Berrigan entitled Wishes from the collected poems of Ted Berrigan, published by the University of California Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Joy Biles, this is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
It's 28 minutes before 4. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest is here to tell us about an incredible celebration which is going to occur at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Judy Crandall is here to tell us about the Gene Rogers Celebration. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Oh, let's turn your microphone on so we can hear your beautiful voice. There you go.
Okay. Thank you, Pat.
Good.
Nice to be here.
So a number of musicians, artists, other people coming together to celebrate Gene's life.
Gene was a great fan of music, as was her husband, George. And I have hopefully collected a whole lot of people that she would love to hear in a afternoon of wonderful celebration.
So tell us about who's going to take the stage.
We're going to have four large groups. We'll have the Juno Pride Chorus, a group from the Lyric Opera, the King Island Christmas Group, and the Alaska Youth Choir will be the large groups that will be there.
Mm-hmm.
And the King Island Christmas Group, of course, will be singing music from King Island Christmas, which was inspired by Gene's book, children's book, King Island Christmas. And we will also have a number of soloists and small groups. And two of the soloists will be Brett and Cheryl Crawford, who will be doing solos from King Island Christmas.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's not just King Island Christmas.
It is
it's
not
a large
just King
number
Island
of
Christmas.
Other pieces as well.
It is a lot of other music. The Lyric Opera group, we will have the best musicians from all generations of Juno artists. We have some young performers, including the Alaska Travelers, who have almost guaranteed a standing ovation when they've performed at the folk festival.
Okay.
Plus, we'll have a number of soloists that have sung with the cabaret singers. Taylor Vedek, a very young performer. And then
incredible voice.
Yes,
yeah.
and Patricia Hall and Deborah Smith. So we have the whole generational range right there.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have some small groups. And then we have a couple of storytellers, Susie Fowler and Bridget Smith, who were in Jean's writing group, and Sandra Strantman, who is a librarian, and Jean was a great fan of libraries.
Mm-hmm. Well, this community that's coming together is going to do all this performance, and essentially there is no admission charge, but there are donations being accepted,
yes,
and they go to a
yes.
very good cause that I think Jean would have greatly approved.
As Jean and George's daughter, Sydney, who cared for them in their last years, said, they had both dreamed of a performing arts center in Juneau. And so they didn't live to see it, but the donations that people give on Sunday will go toward that building fund, which will be overseen by the Juneau... development... Economic Development Council, right.
So the other voice that you're hearing in the background there is my next guest, who's kind of standing by with us here and helping us get through this.
Judy
thing.
Needs all the help.
Katie, I'm the prompter.
Katie Bowsler is coming up shortly on the show here. So.
Thank you.
Anyway, well, this is a truly wonderful thing. It's at 2:00 on Sunday at the Jack. And everyone is just most invited to
just come on in and have a good time.
Yeah, indeed. And remember Jean fondly.
Yes.
Well, thank
yes.
you so much for telling
thank
me.
Thank you very much.
Anticipatory music there. Our last guest today will be telling us about the STAR program up at Perseverance Theater. Quick reminder, the memorial or the celebration for Jean Rogers is going to be held at 2:00 on Sunday at the Jack. So my next guest is Katie Bowsler. Katie is here to tell us about the all-important June 13th enrollment day and
yes.
the fact that we need to start thinking right now about what we're going to enroll in the fall for UAS classes.
Well, exactly, Pat. You might have seen our latest newspaper advertisement, which we're very proud of, which is, this summer, think fall. Now, I know it's summertime, it's sunny outside, a lot of us just graduated from high school. You know, we might not really want to think about school, but you want to reserve your place in the classroom.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, well, it might go away, or the class might even go away. So Enrollment Day, which is next Thursday the 13th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the Learning and Testing Center in the bottom floor of the Egan Library, is a great opportunity to meet with an advisor, to get your student ID, to learn about financial aid. You can even sign up for housing if you want to stay out at the campus this fall as a traditional student. You can look at disability services if you need that, explore classes, be advised on what might be the best degree for you. You can also take placement tests for math and English, which is what many, especially first-time students, need to do. And it helps that this does take place in the Learning and Testing Center, which is where you take those tests. So yeah.
Incoming students are students who've recently graduated from high school or maybe haven't been to a university campus before or for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The real opportunity here is that you can get it all done in one little space. In
yeah.
other words, it's not like somebody is going to say, now you have to go over to building X and then you have to run down the campus to the other end to building Y and like that. The
right.
whole thing is in one room.
Right.
Basically,
right.
or in one small area.
That's
and there's
the
even
idea.
Cookies, right?
I believe so. Yes. And there are also yeah. friendly academic advisors, and that's the best part.
Right, right. The academic advisor, we've had a couple of them on the show to talk to us before. And the real wonder of that is that this is a person who basically takes care of you. This is
mm-hmm.
this is somebody who's you're in on the campus, who's going to say, okay,
yeah.
there's a way we can work that out. No,
yeah.
the problem that you think is going to stop you from doing this deal is surmountable. We can do this.
Right,
yeah.
right, yes.
So.
You are in no way, shape, or form thrown to the wolves at UAS. You get a very nice person who helps you through. You know, I mean, it can be daunting for some people. I mean, no matter if you're just coming out of high school or you've been away from school for a few years and decide you wanted to give it a try, the academic advisors can help you. Also, if you've also already been at another college or university and have some credits, they can help you with those transfer credits.
Which is another real common thing. So many people, I think, come back to Alaska to continue their college education. They go out to the big school. They do okay, but it's, you know, I mean, you're lost. And you think to yourself, nah, I grew up in Juneau, and I'd like to have somebody take care of my education with me.
Well,
that's
also,
what happens at UAS.
Well, also, I mean, I think people go outside and they find out it's a heck of a lot nicer back home. And
yeah.
so they realize what we have here, which is we have a dynamite faculty, a young faculty who are very engaged with students. The typical student these days is different from maybe the one from decades ago. I think of one student in particular who took on-campus classes. She's a Juneau resident, took e-learning classes, was working part-time, and managed to go do some research for her degree on reindeer in Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's you can do that at UAS.
Kinds of things are possible at UAS.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, you can't do that everywhere.
No, you
cool.
can't. And the other thing that yeah. a lot of people don't realize about the quality of the faculty out there is that we have students that come through the UAS system, and by the time they graduate with a four-year bachelor's degree, they've actually got academic publications because
mm-hmm.
in many ways working, it's possible to work with a faculty member in such a way that you're actually getting the kinds of
sure.
Opportunities that someone
yeah.
in a master's program
yeah.
or a doctoral program somewhere else.
Well, yeah, and some environmental science students, for example, have gone straight to PhD programs.
Yeah.
But I also, before my time is up,
yeah.
Pat, I just want to let people know that our related to the enrollment day, if you're wondering what's offered out at UAS this fall, well, our class schedule is out. The fall 2013 class schedule, you'll see it on Capital City weekly stands. You'll see it at the libraries, cafes, various locations around town. And the photograph is a girl who's at orientation day putting her pin on the map of where she's from in the world. And we also have a great picture of our recent graduate, Gloria Lumba, in a forest in Ghana. She was an international exchange student, and this has a listing of all the courses that are offered. You know, we got if you go A to D to Z, from accounting to art to math to statistics to sociology to e-learning, which
yeah.
e-learning are those classes that you can take online. So we, of course, and you know, just to remind people, we have three schools at UAS. We have a School of Management, School of Education, School of Arts and Sciences, and the School of Career Education.
That's four.
So actually, we have four schools. Thank you. Yes, I should know this by now. Yeah.
Okay.
And those are all. Yeah. So there's a lot. We have a lot to offer at UAS. I want to remind people that summertime is the right time to sign up for those fall classes.
Katie Bowsler, always a wonderful opportunity to have you on the show and tell us about what's going on at UAS.
Thank you, Pat.
Dave, see you later.
All right.
Had a terrible itch. He had a bad batch of medicine. He used to get at it with. watch the country burn just to make that dollar bill. Yeah, you gotta make it, make that dollar bill. Lord, you gotta make it, make that dollar bill. Why do you rob, cheat, steal, and lie? You do me wrong when you get your thrill. Would you sell your soul for one more try to make that dollar bill?
The Steamers, and they're going to be playing tonight at the Alaskan about 9:30, and then they've got another gig tomorrow at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. The Steamers, the Alaskan Steamers, are a Juno favorites outfit. That's Sean Tracy, Ben Hodges, Joe Sindel, and Daniel Zay. So they'll be performing here in town tonight at the Alaskan, and that's at 9:30, and tomorrow at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. Hey, my next guest is getting set to cause another performance to occur. Ruth Kostick is here, and she's going to tell us about a program which is in its umpteenth season out at the University of Alaska Southeast.
Well, actually, it's like the 31st year, I think, of STAR this year.
Yeah.
And but due to some construction that's happening out at the university this summer, STAR is going to take place over at Perseverance Theater in Douglas.
Oh, yeah,
you've got
to move it because of the dorm construction that's going up on the hill.
Yeah, they're building the dorm right next to the Noyes Pavilion. So.
Right. So the students are actually going to get into a proscenium stage here.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Wonderful. Well, so who can take this program?
So the STAR program, or the Summer Theater Arts Rendezvous, is for students ages 10 to 18. So it's a pretty broad range there. So, you know, so anyone in that age range can take it. And the program lasts for 5 weeks. It runs July 8th through August 11th. And it culminates in a production, well, or three productions, rather.
Actually, yeah.
And so the students can sign up. They pick a production to be in, and throughout the course of the 5 weeks, they rehearse and eventually perform in full productions. It will be on the Perseverance stage this year.
And the productions that are coming up will be?
And the productions this summer are going to be William Shakespeare's King Lear, which will be directed by Donnie Gott. The musical is going to be Guys and Dolls Jr., and that's going to be directed by Don Colden. And then the third show is going to be Cinderella, and it's not the Disney version. It's based on the Brothers Grimm fairy tale more so than the Disney version. And that's going to be directed by Ekaterina Alexa Sotomayor. So she's a former Juno person who's coming back up to work with us this summer.
What is Ruth Kostick's role in all of this?
I actually am just an administrator at the theater. Our director of education, Shona Strausser, was supposed to be here today, but she was not feeling well, and so I stepped in to come and talk today.
So now, in the program, Shona actually works with the students.
So Shona Strausser is our director of education, and she coordinates the program, and she'll do because we're at the theater this year, we had to kind of split it up. Usually it all happens at one time, but this we're going to have so Guys and Dolls will rehearse in the mornings from 10 to 1, from 10 to 2, 10 to 1. No, sorry.
In the mornings.
In the mornings. They'll overlap in the middle.
I see.
So they'll go from 10 to 2, and then the other two shows will start at 1. And so there'll be an hour in the middle where all the kids will get a chance to work together and do some exercises and stuff as one big group then, too.
Do you have any idea of how many students have actually gone through the STAR program in 31 years?
And total, I don't have that number off the top of my head, but we get, 45 to 50 kids a year. Yeah.
So we're talking about the possibility of maybe 1,200 young actors who have gone through this program. Of course,
probably.
You can repeat it, too.
Yeah. There's definitely been some kids who have repeated years and stuff. And there's, you know, there's kids who've grown up through the STAR program who've gone on to be on the main stage. In fact, two of the local folks who were in the Road Weeps the Laurens Dry recently were former
STAR kids. Okay. Now, this is a college credit class, too, right?
It's young, not this one.
Oh, it's not college credit.
No.
Okay. But are you in conjunction with the school system at all? I mean, is this an elective credit?
The STAR program is not, no.
It's not. Okay. All right. Well, how does someone who is fascinated with the idea of appearing in either King Lear, Guys and Dolls Jr., or Cinderella, or who would like their child to be exposed to the theater, and has a child who is between, did you say 10 and 18?
10 to 18.
10 and 18-year-olds. How would they get into the STAR program? Is there any space left?
Yes, there is space left, and there's more information available on our website at perseverancetheater.org. You can also give us a call at the theater at 364-2421, and Shona's extension is 232, and she's the one who can answer all your questions, and there's registration forms online, or you can register over the phone.
Okay, and once a child is enrolled or a person is enrolled in the program, then the question is, what's the time commitment again?
The time commitment is 5 weeks, starting July 8th, and rehearsals will take place during those first several weeks of it, and the shows will actually perform starting August 2nd through the 11th.
So all three performances will be interweaved.
We call it running in repertory. So
are they all on the same? Are they all in the main stage?
They'll all be on the main stage. Okay. Yes, and so there'll be a base set that serves all of them, but things that change between the three shows to make the set unique for the show.
Do you do this? Students in STAR, do they go into the performance based on auditioning, or do you assign them, or do they choose?
They choose what play they want to be in. They do need to audition. There's the first couple of days, the directors can kind of get a sense of the kids, and then they'll kind of decide on roles and stuff from there. But the kids do get to choose what production
they would like to be in.
If you have
the mornings free, you want to go for Lear. If you have the afternoons free, then you want to go for Guys and Dolls Jr. or Cinderella.
The mornings are King Lear, or Guys and Dolls.
Oh, Guys and Dolls. Okay.
And afternoons are King Lear and Cinderella.
Cinderella. Okay.
Yeah.
So it kind of depends on what the potential student's schedule looks like.
So timing can play into it. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, it's kids, if you're new, if you've never done theater before, or even the experienced kids, there's stuff for everybody, and it's going to be a great learning experience all around.
Do the students in the STAR program do the entire production work? In other words, are there students who are on stage acting, and are there other students who are actually doing things like building sets and costuming and that sort of thing?
Not with this particular program. With this one, the kids are all the students are actually on stage performing, and we hire people in who build the sets and the costumes and support them backstage and such.
But they're in the midst of the theater, so they'll be seeing those things going on and getting the taste of how a production comes together
The set will be being built up around them during rehearsals and such.
Right. Marvelous. Well, what a wonderful opportunity. 31st time through this thing. You're probably getting pretty good at it by now.
Yeah. Got it down.
Practice works pretty well. Shona Strausser will be doing the program. We've heard from Ruth Kostick about this. The program begins once again on July 8th, and it runs for 5 weeks, culminating with performances of Guys and Dolls Jr., King Lear, and Cinderella on August 2 through 11 in repertory. So if you're if you have someone in the household between 10 and 18 who would be interested in a theater experience, STAR is definitely the way to go. Hey, thank you for filling us in on this.
Thank you very much.
You bet. See ya.
Everybody wants to shine.
about 5 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore hosting today on Juneau Afternoon. A couple of quick notes here. The Juneau International Airport announces that the emergency vehicle access road, which everyone knows in town as the Airport Dyke Trail, will be closed to vehicle and pedestrian traffic beginning on Tuesday, June 18th at 7 a.m., and they anticipate being able to reopen on Thursday, June 20th, 2013. So if you're planning on walking your dog on the EVAR, which is the Airport Dyke Trail, between June 18th at 7 in the morning and June 20th at 5:30 a.m., you may need to find another location for that. This is because of work associated with the runway safety area, and they'll be closing the runway for that construction. Another quick announcement, the Saturday hike for June 8th is to Cowie Creek Meadow along the beach to Echo Cove. This is an easy tour. It's about 7 miles round trip, and the group will decide the length and the final destination. If you're interested in going, the ground is wet, so you want to wear waterproof hiking or rubber boots, warm layers of clothing, and you want to bring plenty of food and water. Everyone that wants to go on this meets at the Cowie Creek Bridge at 39 Mile Glacier Highway at 9:30 in the morning, and it'll be about a 20-minute wait for road construction on the way out there, so be sure you factor that into your travel time. Dogs and firearms are not allowed, so no dogs, no firearms, and if you want to come on this, that's the Saturday hike, June 8th, Cowie Creek Meadow along the beach to Echo Cove. Have a great hike. You're in tune with KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you can tune to K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9. In Juneau, you can also hear KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. Our sister stations, KRNN, is on 872, and KXLL can be found on 873. And we're also online 24/7 at www.ktoo.org. A little more music here by the Steamship.
I try to keep my head down and my mouth shut if I can, but I still go off half-cocked every now and then. I'm on the path of least resistance on the way to my objective, which is making it in one piece through one day at a time. And when I lay down tonight, if I've still got a couple of friends left, I'll wake up next morning with a satisfied mind.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering fresh roasted coffees since 1974 and proud supporters of public radio since 1987. Heritage Coffee, committed to community. Information online on Facebook or heritagecoffee.com.
Support for this program comes from the St. Hubert Research Group, offering help with statistical analysis, technical writing, and scientific sampling. More information at 723-3234.
Pat Moore been your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Tomorrow, Joan Pardis will be in as host, and she'll have Melanie Skivens about open houses with the Juneau Transit Plan. Julie Spagel and Ralph Steves will come in to highlight tours offered by the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. Meyer Mew will be, she's a local student selected to study ballet in Russia. She'll be on the show. And next month's Atlin Arts and Music Festival with organizer Kim Winicky will be here. So don't miss Juneau Afternoon tomorrow with Joan Pardis as your host. It's just a few moments before All Things Considered. Another quick note, on June 15th, the Juneau Symphony will be playing Motown for its annual Pops concert at Centennial Hall. They'll be joined by the Motown tribute group, Spectrum, from Los Angeles. Spectrum boasts four singers with all the dance moves and sequined tuxedos of the original Motown bands like the Four Tops and the Temptations. So that's a concert on June 15th by the Juneau Symphony playing Motown. And another quick musical note, it's time for the Juneau's 4th of July celebration and parade, so parade needs a marching band, and the marching band needs you. The rehearsals for the Juno Marching Band are Monday evenings in June from 7 to 9 p.m. and Thursday, June 27th. Concerts in the park are Sunday, June 30th at 3 p.m. and Wednesday, July 3rd at noon.